Hello, folks. My name is Jason Spies, and I'm an award-winning multimedia journalist and I'm the host of the Crude Life Media Network and podcast. Thank you, folks, for tuning in to The Crude Life, a place for expert interviews, full-length features, and specialty programs. And it is all thanks to our fine sponsors. Be loyal to our sponsors. They keep the program free and literally keep our lights on.
Okay, my name is Dan Hedrington. I'm a senior project manager with SEH. SEH is also known as Short Elliott Hendrickson.
So before we get into kind of, you know, your background and everything like that, you know, I want to know about your background and maybe some projects that SEH has worked on in the past. But we were just quickly talking off air that you've got some ties to the Bellfield in North Dakota and that sort of thing where, you know, I was going to eventually ask you about this Davis refinery. So what are your ties to North Dakota and Bellfield?
My wife is actually from Bismarck, North Dakota, and when I first started dating my wife, she took me out back home to visit the family. Her aunt and uncle lived out in Bellfield area. Her on the other side, her aunt and uncle live in Fargo. My niece lives in Fargo, but she took me out there to just kind of, you know, get used to the area and what do you think? Meet my parents, meet my family, and to be honest with you, I fell in love with North Dakota. I really did, especially when you start getting out, in the prairies, in the open spaces. So I'm from Wisconsin originally, and we've got beautiful states as well, but a lot of trees, a lot of forested areas. That open area out there is absolutely amazing. I mean, I just love it. So we find ourselves in North Dakota frequently vacationing. We spend a lot of time out there. I'm actually out there myself. Every other week, I spend a lot of time in North Dakota.
So do you have projects that bring you out there, or is it just for pleasure, or do you try to get projects out there?
It's kind of all of the above. So we do have projects out there. We have, and I try to get projects out there because I love it so much. I love being in North Dakota. So some of the projects that I've worked on out there, Freiburg Rail Terminal, we've done a lot of things in the private sector as far as for oil and gas terminals, receipt points, things like that. We also work a lot in the public sector. So a little bit of background on SEH. SEH is about 90 years old, and we've got about 750 employees ballpark, and we do a lot in both public and private sectors. We work for a lot of different communities out in North Dakota, so Bismarck, Fargo, Grand Forks, you know, a lot of different areas where SEH and our team members have worked as either city engineers or work for the DOT, we work for the Public Service Commission, county, stuff like that. But my forte is private sector primarily. Even though I have done a lot of work for, you know, governing entities in the past, private sector is that's actually where I really feel most comfortable. I like working at it. I've been in the industry for about 30 years. And I have a ton of fun.
One of the reasons why I wanted to have you on is I heard your SEH and your name during kind of that water permit application presentation hearing that Meridian Energy Group did. And our program and our organization are covering the Davis Refinery and the process along the way and just kind of the steps that are going on because it's a very big project coming to the state and especially Western North Dakota. What are you guys doing with Meridian, if I might ask?
Oh yeah, So we're part of the design and permitting team. So obviously, with a project this scale, I mean we have a lot of people and we have a lot of different experts that we bring into the project. So we at SEH work directly with the Meridian folks, and we assist with project and team coordination. We assist with permitting. We are working on designs and various portions of the facility. Even though you bring in an expert that actually knows exactly how to design the crude column, we're doing portions of it, like, you know, the site designs and wetland impacts and stormwater and, you know, different components of the facility. So our responsibilities there's a lot of them, but the team is just outstanding. Every time that we need to pull in another expert on the team, the Meridian folks really know how to pick people who know their job and can get this stuff not only done in a timely manner, but are experts in their field and can do it to the best way, in the best manner possible. So what I mean by that is some of our design components there are better ways in the industry. If you're not too updated on the new technologies or advanced technologies, Meridian always insists that we and the other team members try to use as advanced procedures and design methods as possible to have the best possible project. So it's even though so we have varied responsibilities, but the team as a whole really is complete and just a high-level team. We're very happy and proud to be part of it.
So were you at the public comment presentation and hearing in February for the water sourcing?
I was, yeah.
Tell me how to go. I mean, what was the attendance like, and what was the mood of it, and what kind of transpired with the water hearing? Is that even the correct language to use, water hearing?
Pretty much. I mean, it was meant to be a public hearing for comments and concerns, and more of an informational hearing than anything. When a project like this, and we do a lot of these type of projects, but when a project like this first, you know, begins, some people are misinformed or don't understand exactly what the context of the project is. And in this case, this was about the water allocation itself. So some of the people that were coming there really had no idea as to what was going on. They were simply notified, or they saw it in an ad in the paper, and they wanted to come and just find out about what the project was. So that's really the intent of it, is to inform the public and to give everybody the information so they can understand what we're proposing and how we propose to do it. The hearing itself went very well. The officials that were there from the state of North Dakota did a presentation. You kind of asked how this went. So they did a presentation. They talked about our permit request. They talked about the aquifer that we intend to draw from. And they also were able to show some of the people that were there that our intention is to draw from what's called the Dakota Aquifer. It's about 5,000 feet down. It is not used for any kind of a potable source. So no municipalities use it, no ranches use it, no private residences use it. It's just too deep. We do know that it's a brackish aquifer. It's salty, and we do know we're going to have to treat that water. But the intention that Meridian had from day one is they want to minimize impacts to, you know, the public and to other people as much as possible. They knew that drawing from that aquifer wouldn't impact them, because no one else draws from that for, you know, potable reasons. No one tries to drink that water.
You mentioned some state officials were there. Any locals make it out?
Oh, yeah. Actually, the vast majority of it were locals. We have a tremendous amount of people who support the project. In general, there, if you were to ask me to kind of give you a order of magnitude, size of attendance, we had about 60 to 70 people. I'd say three-quarters of them were people who really support the project. They took time out of their busy day to come in and attend this public hearing and to listen to what was going on and show their support. The other percentage, I think, that were there, they were, in my opinion, a little bit misinformed of what our intentions were, and I was very happy to see that we could show them what we were doing. Some of them were concerned that we were going to be drawing from the potable aquifer, and we just, you know, we were able to show them, and the state officials were able to show them that's not the case. And the way that these wells are designed, they're intentionally, you know, designed to protect other groundwater sources from any kind of contamination or impacts or anything like that. So the vast majority were local, and very, very supportive. We even had the mayor of Belfield, who was just a super gentleman, who came, took time out of his day as well to show his support. He offered a few comments in support, but I'd say the vast majority of the locals in the area are very, very supportive of our project.
Dan Hedrington, SEH, on the line with us, talking about the Davis Refinery coming to Belfield, North Dakota. He's talking about the water hearing that they had about different permits and is pulled for, and that is not done yet, right? That's still it'll be probably a week or two before that comes back. Is that right?
That's correct. So what happened is the state officials took all the comments. They recorded the entire meeting. They took all the comments from those attending, but also they took written comments from other people who didn't have the ability to attend. They will actually take all those comments and consider, you know, potential impacts, or consider and evaluate those as far as for, you know, what they would recommend to our process And then at that point, they're going to come back and they'll say, what we're hoping for is a recommendation that they allow us the allocation of water we requested. And it may have, you know, a condition or something on it. They may offer insight or some thoughts as far as for concerns from someone in the area or something like that. But yeah, we're hoping that we get that back in the next few weeks.
Just a couple more questions left. Transitioning to the environmental studies still, or sticking on that, but wonder more about wildlife. Are you guys much involved with any wildlife studies with the environment? I know they're trying to do quite a bit to be environmentally sound, and the wildlife, obviously, that's a big part of the environment. Are you guys involved with anything like that?
Oh, yeah, and actually, the permits that we were granted by the by Billings County, there were actually there was a fair amount of attention being given to those issues, that issue specifically. So part of the process is county asked us, okay, what's going on with cultural resources? What's going on with endangered species, threatened or endangered species? So what we do as part of our permitting process through the county, we contacted federal and state agencies that are in charge of wildlife. So specifically U.S. Fish and Wildlife and North Dakota Game and Fish, and they did a database research. They did the database research on their system and found that there was no impacts to threatened or endangered species. But actually what they found was, specifically it was worded like this, no threatened or endangered species would likely be impacted in the area or for the project. Now, I'm going to elaborate on that just a little bit just to give everybody an understanding. In the event that we're out there, and even though that those agencies said that there wasn't going to be an impact or would likely not be an impact, in the event that we're out there and we begin construction and we find something, we're obligated, we have a duty to report that to those agencies so they can come in and assist us with either, trying to come up with a remedy or a modification to the facility that would minimize those impacts. So even though they came back and said, you know, we're good, we don't think we're going to have any impacts, we still have to watch for that during construction process. The second part of that is, on that same question is, we also do things like wetland impact studies. We do wetlands protection. We're concerned about wetland protection, so we went up there and we delineated the sites, so the boundary or perimeter of the wetlands, so that we can incorporate that information into our design, so that we minimize any impacts that minimize as much impact to those wetlands as we can. So any potential wildlife or species really that are living in those, you know, we minimize those impacts as well. We also are in the process of developing a program to work with some local universities to come up with a program with them and their staff and their students to, because this project is, you know, we're very excited about it. It's a high level project where we have a lot of opportunity to do some really good things. And on the property that's preserved for the development itself, there's additional acreage that won't be utilized. So what we're doing is we're in the process of developing a program with those local universities to come up with ways that we can use that property to the best benefit of the area. And some of the things that have been suggested is possible habitat for different things, but also maybe planting clover, things like that, for the bee species in the area, and help with that population out there, that so that we can support it as well. So there's a bunch of things that are kind of going on. Some of it had to be done early on in regards to, because Billings County was concerned about those the impacts to threatened and endangered species prior to their issuing of their permit. And then the other things as far as sort of like wetland, that's ongoing, and working with local universities, that's ongoing. So there's a bunch of things that are going on. We definitely have Meridian's direction that this is an important part of the project. They want our attention given to it, and we're working on those areas.
I think one of my favorite things about this whole deal is, well, first of all, you find out exactly how much goes into permitting and goes into site and everything that goes with just building. I mean, everything that goes into it before you even dig with a shovel is unbelievable. And to me, one of the more amazing ones was, I was talking with the CEO, William Prentice, I think it was right around Christmas time, and he mentioned to me about flying a kite so that people from the park couldn't see it, or there was a certain amount of distance so that nobody could see it. You said yes, so you're familiar with this. Describe this kite thing that had to happen. I mean, to me, that took the cake when it came to permitting. I mean,
well, I appreciate that, but to be honest with you, it was a lot of fun. It gave us an opportunity to interact with the locals out there, and actually, I think that's why we have so much support from the locals, people who are actually paying attention to what we're doing and how we're trying to incorporate all of these beneficial things into the project are really supportive. They're just, and they've been great to deal with. So what, the little bit of background on this was this. So when we were going through the Billings County permitting for our conditional use permits and our zoning approvals, the concern came up from the park is that we would be able to, they would be able to see it, the facility from the park. So initially we did, we grabbed the two closest locations to the facility that are in the park, which was, I think we used the southeast corner of the park, and I believe we used the visitor center right there along I-94. So we went up to those locations. We fully surveyed this with our instruments. So we surveyed the location of our refinery compared to that site, and then we took photographs from those viewpoints, and then we overlaid our refinery on those photographs, but we also took into effect the contours of the property or the land in between the park itself and the refinery. And what we found in from both of those locations was that the refinery sits well below the horizon line. You cannot see it from those locations, which were the two closest locations. Well, then we heard that, well, you know, maybe it's visible from Buck Hill. Buck Hill is actually the highest point within the Teddy Roosevelt Park. So we did the same thing, but that one we took another step because we were using, for the contours of the land in between the park and the refinery, we're using USGS mapping. So USGS is United States Geological Society maps, and when we superimposed the refinery over the photographs that were taken, it was, we thought maybe you would see a few feet of it, like a very little amount. I'm giving an idea, like 20 feet. By the way, what you would potentially see is the highest point in the refinery is a 10-foot wide, 150-foot tall column. It's called a crude column. So it's like you'd envision like just a big cylindrical tube that sits up in the air. Okay, so actually this is kind of neat. I'm glad you asked about this. So we said, okay, with the USGS data that we have, we believe you might be able to see the top 20 feet or so, but we're not positive because now we were talking about it's so far, it's 7 miles away. The amount that you can see from that distance is so little. Let's just go out there. We did the actual visual representation, but we went out there and we bought a 35-foot long kite that was 11 foot wide, highly visible, and we used surveyors on the site to pinpoint the location of that kite. We initially were looking at using things like weather balloons and things like that, but the winds are unpredictable in that area. So we went up there. Well, they're predictable, but we didn't know what we were going to have that day. So we ended up using the kite, this highly visible kite. We flew it up to 150 feet high, which is the height of the column. And we had a whole bunch of people. We invited the public and just generally, you know, come on up to Buck Hill. We're going to have an event, and we're going to show you what you can see from the column. And, you know, if you can see it, great. And if you can see it, you see it. And if you don't, you don't. Well, people were bringing up spotting scopes and binoculars and all kinds of things to try to enhance their vision. And really what it boiled down to is this. We flew the kite up. It's bigger and it's wider than the actual column's going to be, and it's highly visible against the sky, when in reality the column won't, it'll be earth-toned, so it won't be as visible. So we fly it up there. Nobody can see it. I mean, we're messing around looking at this thing and, you know, talking back and forth on radios with the surveyors, and yep, it's up there and everybody's good. Nobody can see this thing. So we decided that we're going to raise it up to 250 feet, which is 100 feet higher than the actual column's going to be. So once we got it up there, took a little while. Remember, it's 7 miles away, and it's only 10 feet wide, or the kite is 11 feet wide. You could barely see a speck off with either binoculars or spotting scopes. I don't believe anybody with a bare eye could see it. So then what we did is said, okay, everybody grab it, you know, look at it right now, and keep your eyes on it with your binoculars and your spotting scope, and now we're going to lower it back down to the actual elevation that the column sits at. We lowered it back down to the actual elevation, and it disappeared. You couldn't see it. There was so many terrain changes and things in the way, and the fact that it's 7 miles away proved to everybody, and actually it was even for the reporters up there and things like that as well. Everybody was very comfortable with, yeah, you're not going to see this thing. So even though it sounds kind of I don't know, expensive to go to those lengths, Meridian was very happy to do so, just in order to make sure that the locals and the park officials would be satisfied that this is not going to impact the view from that location. You're not going to be able to see it, and it's not going to, you know, ruin the entire, it's our belief that it's not going to ruin the entire, the entire experience of being at Buck Hill. So it ends up being a lot of fun. And like I said, I think that helped us with more local support. The locals that were up there were just, you know, tremendous. It gave us an opportunity to meet them, but they also knew the extent that Meridian was going to go to in order to protect, you know, everybody's, you know, public interest in the area. So it was all in all, it turned out very, very well. I was very happy we did it.
That holds us laughing. And here's to the sound of one hand clapping. And here's to not letting this moment pass. And here's to carrying the weight of the world. And here's to screaming, yeah, never being heard. And here's to not letting this moment pass.
My name is Otis, and I am the host of the Kids in Capitalism KidCast. Let me tell you about one of our sponsors. Hatch Realty is in the business of helping people. They just happen to sell real estate. Call Eric Hatch or anyone on the Hatch Realty team with any real estate question. They want to be a resource and connection for you. That's Hatch Realty, 701-212-1572. That's 701-212-1572. Hatch Realty in the business of helping people. They just happen to sell real estate. Hatch Realty, tell them Otis sent you.
Since 1979, MBI Energy Services has committed to responsibly growing with today's oil and gas industry by providing proven experience, strategic locations, and integrated services. MBI Energy Services is well established, and its innovation in safety and excellent customer service is what truly makes MBI Energy Services the oil field service professionals. MBI Energy Services, the cutting edge in oil field safety solutions. Learn more at MBIEnergyServices.com.
Now, many of you are familiar with, like, the Soybean Bureau, the Corn Association, the Farm Council, different organizations like that. Well, let me introduce you to the Dakota Cannabis Club, a member-driven association that provides professional assistance to the cannabis industry, plus representation at the state capitol. The future of North Dakota's cannabis industry is being set today, with laws and rules under development that will define how the business can operate in the future. DakotaCannabisClub.com. That's DakotaCannabisClub.com.